Hi, everybody. This is the Ramble Redhead Show, and this is now part two with the interview with Fred. And again, Fred has told us a lot of great information so far, and we're going to continue to listen to not only about his life, but also about the program that he's involved with. Again, that is the Call to Duty Tour, and you can find their website at calltodutytour.org. And don't forget the www dot and then before that. And you can find all the information about not only the speaking engagements, but you can find out more about the speakers, which again includes Fred. And we're going to get back to his story. And as we ended on the last episode, Fred was talking about his deployment when he was in Somalia. And basically, Fred, what I wanted to do is just ask, did you have anything else that you'd like to add regarding, you know, the different missions, like you said, regarding the hurricanes as well as the other things that you did, and then also, you know, about that deployment, and then if you could then after that, just tell us about what happened afterwards.
Okay. So, basically, Somalia, after the Black Hawk Down night, things got relatively quiet for us. There was some sort of strange peace agreed to, but it was a rough experience. It was combat. There was bloodshed. We lost friends. It was rough. And as a family, as a battalion, we pulled through okay. But it seriously messed up some people. For days, weeks, months afterwards, you would see your brothers crying, and it was understood what was going on. Not that we're a bunch of pussies, but there was some difficulty in dealing with some of the stuff.
So what kind of support did you get during all that?
Well, each other. Basically, we had a unit chaplain who was always available to talk about stuff, but that's when it's something like that, you don't turn to an outsider. You turn to your brother who was there with you.
Right.
So we got each other through it. Much like we did that night, and that's what it was all about. Was this was what we were trained to do. We did it well.
Right.
And there's no need to have regrets and remorse. Just try to figure it out and to go on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just here for 3 years and then I'm out. But it really was that experience in Somalia that made me then stay in for almost 12 years. I did five more after that as an enlistedman, got out, went to college, and then came back in as an officer. But the fact that I knew that I had experience, that I had knowledge, I had a focus and some talents that not too many people did. I mean, we were referred to as the best trained battalion in the Army. You know, I saw the awesome training that got us up to our successful combat experiences, and I felt that it was my duty to return that and to take my training and my abilities and to teach other soldiers, become a leader and make sure that other soldiers were able to go to war and come back alive. And that's what I did. So I stayed in and devoted my life to teaching what I knew.
Did your unit get obviously recognized and awards and that kind of
thing? Yes, actually we did. It's kind of funny, not to bore you with Army politics, but Rangers don't really like other units. They think they're the best, and the fact that they had to call for a regular leg infantry unit to come help them was not something that they were terribly proud of. And so there was a little bit of animosity and, some stuff like that. But when everything was said and done, they put our battalion in for a Valorous Unit Award, which is an award that is given, a lot of the awards in the Army are individual awards for individual achievements. But I wore on my uniform a citation for the entire unit that I was a part of, and it was the Ranger Battalion that had put us in for that. So that was, you know, it was a very nice gesture.
So that must have made you feel very proud of not only yourself but also your unit, and that, you know, you guys were heroes. So I mean, that's so congratulations on that. So
thank you.
That's awesome. So I mean, that's just amazing. And you know, again, I just want people to understand that people like Fred are the ones that are serving our country and defending the country, you know, for the people in the United States, and that, you know, that basically don't accept gay people. And I want people to understand that, you know, there are a lot of people that are like Fred who have served their country and unfortunately have died for their country. You know, and so people have to understand that, you know, that Fred is one of our heroes, and I applaud you for what you did, and I'm so glad that you did what you did. I mean, as far as for us as a country. So I thank you for what you did, because that's outstanding.
Well, thank you. I was in the company of some really great men, and wouldn't have made it through without them. So I can't take all the credit.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying, as an individual, I want you to accept, you know, the praise that I'm giving you, because you on it, you owned it, and you deserve it, and you should always be, like you said, you'd be very proud of that, because that's important. And you have to, I mean, there's a lot of people that I've talked to that have been in the military that have done outstanding things, and they're like, oh, it was just okay. I mean, they act like, oh, it's all right. I don't, you know, but they're very humble, and they don't take the credit that they properly deserve. So, and that's what I'm trying to say. So, but again, thank you so much for what you did. Is there anything else you'd like to add about that, or would you like to go into about what happened afterwards?
Yeah, we can go into what happened afterwards. Sure,
okay, great. So after you got done with that deployment, then you came back to the States.
Correct. That deployment was kind of that was the end of our cohort together. We had reached our 3-year commitment. A lot of people. Well, we in Alpha Company. I was in Charlie Company, but in Alpha Company, an entire platoon reenlisted together, which was just unheard of and crazy. It just shows you what a great, great, great cohesive unit our leadership had built. But some of us reenlisted. Some of us got out. You know, we went our separate ways because our 3-year commitment was up.
Mm-hmm.
And
so, what was that like for you? I mean, as far as the. I mean, was it weird having people leave like that?
It was weird. I was one of the people who left.
Okay.
You know, you know, like there was, you know, I guess if you wanted to rate things, like the people who got out of the Army, they were the ones who were like, oh man, you're making a big mistake. And then the people who left Fort Drum were just a little bit above them. You know, why are you leaving? You know, but yeah, I came out to Fort Lewis. I came out to Seattle, and it was hard. You know, I mean, this was my family. These were, you know, these were people that I hold very dear and true to my heart. But that's, you know what? That's the way the Army is. You spend time with people, you train with people, you do missions and go to war with people, and then you move on and you take your experiences elsewhere and you make the next unit better, you know? So.
Right. So what happened then when you got out? I mean, you didn't get out, did you? Is that when you went to school then?
Oh yeah, no. Then when I left Fort Drum, I reenlisted at Fort Drum.
Okay.
And went to Fort Lewis, Washington, which is about 45 minutes south of Seattle. Moved on to another unit. And
what did you do there?
Well, there I was still an infantryman, and I got. That's when I first became a squad leader, you know, started working my way up into leadership positions, and I did pretty damn good. I had a really tight squad. They were good troops, you know, even the not so good ones had a lot of heart, and we were a really good team. So that was my first real taste of Army leadership. That unit never deployed. We went on a lot of training missions. We did tons of training, but I never deployed anywhere with them. And then after that, I went to Korea. I spent a year in Korea with another amazing unit. I've just been blessed with really good units. That, you know, the year tour in Korea is something that you'll either love or you'll hate, and I happen to be one of the people who loved it. But by the time I was done with Korea, it was like I started to think it was time for, I was coming up on 10 years. Well, I was coming up on 8, but if I reenlisted again, then I would have to go over 10 years. And I thought, well, if I'm going to go over 10 years, I might as well make this a career.
Right.
And so I decided I would get out and go to school, but in order to, like, finish up my time and my commitments, I had to come back to the States for a year, and that was in Fort Stewart, Georgia, which is kind of over up by the coast by Savannah. And there's one of my proud accomplishments as well, is that I was only there for a year, and when I arrived at that unit, the platoon that I took over had just failed their ex-evals, their external evaluations. They, across the board, failed every single task that they were tested in.
Wow.
And, yeah, it's like, woo! No, I mean, that's great. That was a, boy, I'm glad I got these guys. And so I came in, and with all new leadership, there's, you know, a little bit of resistance and a little bit of confusion. But I came in as the platoon sergeant, and in a one-year time period, when I was, you know, getting out of the Army, and there's all kinds of, like, meetings and paperwork, and, you know, like, here's how to get out of the Army classes that you have to do. I had appendicitis, so I had my appendix removed. I had a varicose seal, which is a pretty disgusting surgery on my nuts. So I had these three things going on, and I had a platoon that had failed everything, and I knew I would be leaving the unit in January of that year, and they were deploying to Iraq in March of that year. And in 1 year time period, I trained them up, and I had them so tight that in December we went through another ex-eval, and they got trains across the board. So, you know, like, I'm really proud of that. That's one of those moments where I can step back and I can say, yeah, my experiences in Somalia gave me a focus that platoon needed, and that, you know, made that platoon a unit that could fight and live and survive and know what it was about.
So, just for our listeners who are not in the military,
I'm sorry.
We need to backtrack a little bit. When you say the evaluations, and you obviously got an excellent rating, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so I just want to make sure that people understood what that meant, is that when you did well, I mean, you went from being failing to excelling within 1 year with what you did. So, I mean, I want to make sure they understand that you did an excellent job there. So that's good. Now, what I was, and I know, see, one of the things that people like to listen to is that, you know, they always want these little juicy details. And what I was wondering is that while you were back in the States, one of the things that I was wondering is that, you know, because you are a gay guy, and obviously you're a young guy, and then you're dealing with the, you know, dealing with that and also being in the military, did you go to any, like, civilian bars and stuff like that? Did you meet anybody? Were you dating anybody at that time?
We're looking for the juicy, juicy details.
Not juicy, juicy, but I'm just saying, I was just wondering if, did you meet anybody? That's all.
I don't kiss and tell, Tom. No, one of the things about me and my early years military experience, when I got out, went to college and went back in as an officer, it was a completely different experience. But one of the things is that I really did not want to be gay. I really thought that it was a choice, you know, that if I chose to be straight, then I could be straight, you know, and I now know that that's a ridiculous, horrible thing to do to a person, but that's what I really had hoped for.
Yeah.
So when I was at Fort Drum, I would, you know, go out to the strip bars, I'd go out to the clubs, you know, but these were straight places, you know, and I'd go out with the boys and we'd have a good time. And I would have a girlfriend back home, in quotation marks, you know, like that kind of stuff. It was Watertown, New York is you're in the middle of nowhere, and it's a beautiful country up there, but there's not a gay community, or at least there wasn't a gay community there that would have offered me anything. When I got to Fort Lewis, which is about a half hour south of Seattle, however, Seattle does have a gay community, and that's when I started thinking, okay, let me try this out. Let me, you know, I have a feeling that this is something that I want to do. Let me go up and do it. But the problem with it is that once again, you get this close family, and everybody does everything, and everybody knows everybody's business. And if we're used to, we live in the barracks, we know each other, and hey, we're all going to go hiking out in the Olympics this weekend, what are you doing? And I say, oh, I'm just going to sit here in the barracks, don't worry about me. It becomes a challenge, and you have to sneak out. And so I would occasionally sneak out and get up to some of the bars up in Seattle. And the sad thing to me about that all is that because I was sneaking out, it was dirty. Because I couldn't have a relationship, because I would go to the nearest big city that was far enough away that I wouldn't run into army people if they happened to be there, and all that kind of stuff, was that it further damaged me as accepting myself as a gay man, because there was no emotional connection. It was hookups. It was going to the bar, meeting people, having sex, and then leaving. And it just kind of started to reinforce in my mind, yeah, this is dirty, and this is sick, and this is unhealthy. And that was not, that was very counterproductive to myself as just, being a human being. So that was hard. After I left Seattle, or Fort Lewis, I should say, in Korea, it wasn't an option. I mean, you just don't have that sort of liberty and to go out and explore. At least I did not where I was. And then my final year at Fort Stewart, which, there was no, I didn't even have a life. I mean, I was so busy training and preparing that platoon and turning that platoon around and then preparing to get out of the army and then recovering from two surgeries even if I had, had been comfortable with being gay and had a boyfriend at the time, I don't know if we would have made it through that year. You know what I mean? Like, my whole focus was the army for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for 365 days. So I never had much of an opportunity to get juicy bits, to tell during that early part.
Yeah, well, I just want people to understand that, what you had to go through and, if you had to. Because, like, for example, when we talked to Jared, he was able to, date, and he ended up meeting a guy that was in the Air Force, and they had, a long-distance relationship, because he then went to Korea, and he had his partner at the time was back in the States, and so it was very difficult. And one of the things that he said is that if anybody's stationed in Korea, and you're with somebody, it's one of the toughest things to have to go through. So it really didn't, unfortunately, it didn't last for him. But and I was just curious if you had anything like that had happened. That's why I asked the question. So after you then, did some time after you got back from that deployment, and then you were down in Georgia. So then what happened after that point?
Okay, so after I left the Army, I started school. Went to Northern Michigan University, and I should throw in, actually, before then, I took a really nice long break, because I got out of the Army in February and school didn't start until the fall, and I worked at the Grand Canyon, and it was like the best 7 months of my life.
Oh, wow. So yeah, what did you do there?
I just worked at one of the concession stands, which was a mindless, after you, spend 8 years in the Army of having to pay attention to everything, and it was just so nice to just have a job where all I did was, sell concessions for 3 days a week and then go hiking for 2 days. It was just, it was beautiful. It was wonderful. It was great.
So how'd you get that job?
I found it online.
Really?
Yeah, I think it was cooljobs.com. I don't know. like something like that. And
wow.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, but, the Grand Canyon is, if you've never been there, listeners, it's one of the most beautiful places.
It's incredible.
It's awesome.
It's incredible. Yeah, I don't even like looking at pictures of it anymore, because they don't even, it's just,
they don't do it,
they don't do it justice.
Yeah, they don't do it justice. Because I was been there a couple years ago, and I went to this, they had like this tour thing with this Indian reservation, and you actually got to go to the part of the canyon that normally the general public don't get to go.
Okay.
And it was just amazing, and you see the eagles flying, and you just see, it's just, see the water going through. It's just amazing. And then I'll never forget, this is a stupid side story, but there's this one guy, and there was like this little ledge that went out past, of course the Grand Canyon, but there was this little ledge, and this young guy gets on his hands and knees on the edge, and then he crawls out, and he's like looking down, and he's trying to take a picture. And a friend of mine, because I went with another gay couple, and the thing was funny is that this one older guy is just standing there watching him, and he's just shivering in fear for this guy because he's afraid he's going to do something stupid. And I thought, God, it just rained a little bit ago, and I kept thinking, God, if this guy makes one little move, he's going to go, but he didn't. But it was one of the most surreal moments of my life, and I mean, I just loved that place. And every time I get back to the area, like when I was in Vegas for a sales meeting, unfortunately, we didn't get enough free time to actually go back, but I wanted to go back so badly because it's just a beautiful area. And okay, we're getting off topic, but anyway. Okay, back to that. So after you did the Grand Canyon, and
So I had that time off. Then I went to get my undergrad. Went up to Northern Michigan University, which is a beautiful little school up on the shores of Lake Superior in Northern Michigan. And I enrolled in the RCC program, made a lot of really good friends with, you know, the RCC cadets, and I mean, my best friend today was one of my RCC buddies. And, so college, as they claim, you know, that liberal bastion of free thought and whatever, really started opening my eyes to my sexuality, to who I was. You know, I was freer there. I didn't have the constraints of the army. I was still in the ROTC program, but I didn't have so much pressure to deny who I was. I can't say that I had a boyfriend, but you know, I went out and, you know, and I started understanding that there was more to it than sex, that there was an emotional connection, that, you know, that I fell madly in love with a straight guy, you know. You know, and it just, you know, it became an eye-opening experience that then transitioned once I went back into the Army as an officer. And one of my assignments was I got sent to Atlanta, Fort McPherson, Atlanta, to work on some stuff for Iraq and Afghanistan. And while I was down there, Atlanta has a really nice, really great gay community, that it was the first community that I was ever a part of where I met openly gay men who were like me, you know, who I could associate with, reflecting back to, you know, 10, 11 years prior when I was living in a small town in Michigan, you know, who I never would have realized, oh, you can be this way and you can be gay, and you can be that way and you can be gay, that it's not a set stereotype, it's just a way of loving. It's not anything dirty or nasty.
Right.
So during my time down there in Atlanta, where I got a gay circle of friends, I became a part of a gay community, I went out on dates, I had my first boyfriend, you know. I learned to accept and to love myself, and then I came out to a couple of friends who totally pissed me off by saying, oh yeah, we've known for years, we were waiting for you to tell us, you know. I was just like, oh man. And you know, so after telling a couple friends, it just got easier, and then I started telling everybody that I could, you know. I mean, I had military friends who I just didn't know how they were going to react, so it was too risky for me to tell them, you know, and risk potentially losing my career. So I remained closeted to my military friends. I had a very different experience than Jared, and I'm amazed when I hear Jared's stories, but I remained closeted to my military friends, and within about a 3-month time period, I had come out to my family, I came out to myself, I came out to my friends, I came out to my family, and was totally proud and happy of who I was, and I had to remain in the closet at work. And that was trouble.
Well, I don't want you to just give a brief thing about that, but I want you to tell me what the experience was like when you came out to your friends and your family and all that.
When it started, it was very nerve-wracking. You know, I mean, I was really scared. And, I mean, these were people who I'd been friends with since forever. You know, like, they knew me when. You know. And yeah, I was terrified that this thing about me was going to be, you know, was going to ruin our friendship, you know. And like I said, the first couple people I told were what I guess I would call them safe people, you know, that I really thought, okay, nothing bad is going to happen. You know, I'm going to be fine with these, you know, these people love me and will never, you know, like it was testing the waters, so to speak. And it was such a positive and rewarding, you know, they're like, wow, like I said, you know, we know, you know, which, you know, I was like, could you at least act surprised, maybe, you know, I don't know, something, just, you know, humor me here. But so it made it easier, and in fact, it like not just easier to come out to other people, but it made it easier for me to, you know, because I look back on it, and everybody's experience is different. So I don't want to claim that this is like a all-encompassing gay statement. But to me, part of why I wouldn't tell people that I was gay was because I hadn't accepted it myself. That to vocalize it and to say it to other people, to say it to my family, to say it to my friends, had less to do with me being afraid that they were going to reject me than it, you know, it had more to do with me still not accepting myself.
Right. And, you know, and if I could just add real quick, is that one of the key things that I want people to understand, that if you're going through that right now, if you're in that process where you feel like you're gay, but you're not sure if you want to, you know, tell anybody, but the key thing is you gotta love yourself first, and then
you have to
like what Fred did is tell somebody that you know that no matter what they're gonna accept you, because you want to do something, you want to get the reassurance, you want to get that positive, you want to, you know, and you know, as much as Fred didn't want to hear it, I mean, about when the friend said, oh yeah, we know, and, but the thing is that's important, and it's, you know, and people, you know, need to understand it. If you by chance are a straight person, and you know, and you maybe you suspect that maybe your friend might be gay, maybe you could bring it up in conversation, but not and just say, oh yeah, I saw the show on like Will and Grace, and I thought it was really cool what, you know, Will did for Grace, you know, and you know, even though, you know, he said, you know, he's gay, but it was cool, you know, and maybe say something like that, but maybe it would give them the encouragement to maybe actually come out. And so, but, you know, do it. Don't say, oh, yeah, are you gay? You know, don't do that. But I'm just saying, just make little comments like that that can maybe help a person who's gay so that, you know, Fred, I mean, I'd be honest with you, like what happened to me when I told a friend of mine, I was like, oh, my God, I was afraid I was going to lose him as a friend because growing up, he always would make comments about gay people. And I'm thinking, oh, great, if I tell him I'm never going to have, he's not going to have anything to do with me. But the thing was, before I told him, I said, do you have an idea what I'm about to tell you? And he says, well, I think I have an idea. And then I said, he said, Tom, I just want you to know that I love you as a friend. You're like a brother to me. My wife adores you. The kids adore you. There's nothing that you say that's going to change my feelings for you.
Yeah, that's nice.
And it was just an amazing moment. And then I just told him, and he's like, well, that's what I thought. And he says, don't worry, Tom, it's cool, I love you. And I mean, it was just an amazing experience. So, I mean, that's what I want people to get. And I hope that, you know, there are great people out there that will understand. But then on the other hand, you have to understand there are going to be people that might not. And so you have to be prepared for the good, but you also have to be prepared, you know, if it may go bad. And so you have to be willing to be honest with yourself. So, I mean, I'm really glad that you were able to get a more positive than negative experience, and I just hope that, you know, more people can go through that and they can, you know, be happy with who they are. And because, like you said, living with that, you know, living with the lion and being dishonest and, you know, not accepting yourself, it's not doing you or anybody else that's involved in your life any good. So, I mean, it's very important that you have to be sincere.
Right. And you know, and when I look at it, because I was 28 when I came out, when I came out to myself, I was 28, and a part of me really wishes, man, I wish that I hadn't gone through all these years of hell, and I wish that, you know, when I was going through puberty, and you know, I had a, you know, a different environment, and I could have come out then, you know, and I do wish that I hadn't wasted all those years of hating myself and trying to be somebody else, but on the same token, I did it when I was ready, you know. So yeah, you know, like it's kind of like a double-edged sword that I just wasn't ready to accept it, and do I regret that? Not really, but it just, you know, does that make sense? Am I?
Oh yeah, because Fred, I'm right there with you, because I was, because the funny thing was, I was getting ready to say that too, because as much as my life, I regretted, you know, putting my life on hold basically and denying who I was. Is that I really, because after I came out to that friend that I just told you about, one of the things is I said, wow, I wish I would have done it sooner.
Yeah.
And, but then the thing was, is that I thought, well, maybe if I had done it sooner, then maybe his opinion might not have been the way that it is now.
Right.
Because what happened was, because during high school, he made a lot of, you know, anti-gay remarks. And I kept thinking, wow, if I'd have told him then, maybe he wouldn't have been my friend. But then because of the fact that he and I grew up together, we've been together for 30 years now as friends, and, you know, maybe because he got married and maybe he had kids, and maybe he realized, wow, if one of my kids is gay, you know, I'm going to have to accept them for that, and maybe that changed his attitude about it. And then, because like you said, you know, basically education on anything, you know, if you don't, what you don't understand, you can't comprehend, you can't accept. And so just like accepting a gay person is the same thing. Once you know someone that's gay, and you know they're part of your life and that you care about them, you know, it's going to change your opinion on gay people. And I think that's what it did for him.
Mm-hmm.
So as much, like you said, as much as I hated all that time spent thing with my folks, I mean, I waited before I came out to them. And then when I did, my mom, they're like, hey, it's okay. We love you for who you are. You know, we just want you to be happy. It's like the old saying, we just want you to be happy. And so it's just amazing. And I just wish more of the younger people could realize that, and I think a lot of them are. I think that's what the gay programming that we have on TV, the resources that they have on the internet, you know, the podcasting that we're doing, like my show, it's able to speak to a generation that when we were younger wasn't even available. And so I think it's going to make things a lot better for the generation coming up.
Yep.
And I'm very proud to be a small part of that. So that's cool.
Yeah.
So I know we're, I mean, I know there's probably a lot more we could talk about, and but I realize that it's, because you're going to have to get going soon, aren't you?
Yes, indeed. I have an early morning class. So.
Okay, so what I'll do is, even though I don't want to, I think we better end this part. Hold on, Fred. So everybody, if you'd like to, please get back with me. If you'd like to email me about this episode, if you'd like to email any information you'd like to tell Fred about the show, let me know what your comments are. You can go to our website, which is www.rambleredhead.blogspot.com. You also can email me at rambleredhead@gmail.com or rambleredhead@AOL or Yahoo, depending on the service that you might have. And then any message you'd like to give to Fred, I will forward to him. And again, I'd like to thank Fred for his participation. Hopefully, maybe later on we could have a part three if you'd like, because I think we kind of left it up in the air a little bit. There's still more to tell, so hopefully we can do a part three and at a later date. But I would like to thank Fred for his participation. And again, don't forget about checking the website for what he's doing, which is, again, is www.calltodutytour.org. Say that five times real fast. And but, Fred, again, thank you so much for your participation. And like I said, hopefully we can do a part three later on. Would you like to say anything else as we close?
Just thanks, Tom. And kind of just tagging on to the end there, what you were saying, that do it when you're ready, but the best thing you can do for the cause is to come out, because people got to know what a gay person is. So.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show. And hold on. So again, you can email me at rambleredhead@gmail.com, and thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.